with it. 1003, we'll get there in the end. So we're looking at Mark's gospel, probably the first gospel to be written. And if I wanted to sum up the gospel style in three words, I would say it's simple but subtle. Mark is very straightforward. He just gets on with the action. And it's easy to understand. It's accessible to everyone. And yet, as you study it, you see there's a depth there. Things are very carefully written and carefully chosen. And there's more and more to discover. So it is accessible but deep, shallow enough for a child to wade, and yet deep enough for an elephant to swim. And my title this morning is The Community of Jesus. And on the screen, we're going to see what we're going to look at. We're going to look at time, risk, touch, and cost. So verse 35, very early in the morning while it was still dark. So we're talking 4 a.m. or something. Very early in the morning, Jesus gets up and he goes out to pray to a solitary place where he prayed. He doesn't tell them where he's going, so they have to search for him. Simon and his companions went to look for him, verse 36. And it must have taken them several hours, first to notice that he's gone, and secondly to find him. And he has all that time alone with God. In Mark, Jesus is only recorded as praying three times, and each time it's at night. So he made time to be with his Father. Everyone wanted an appointment. Everyone is looking for you, verse 37. People came to him from everywhere, verse 45. They were even smashing the roof in to get to him, we'll see next week. And so there were huge demands on him, and he had power to heal anyone. And he wanted to heal everyone because he had compassion. He was moved with compassion, it says. And yet, even with that pressure, he made time to pray. We would say, well, the desperate need, I've just got to get on with it. I won't bother wasting time with prayer. But Jesus knows that unless he carves out that time to be with his Father, everything else will go wrong. What does Jesus do when he prays? Well, we get a clue at the third time he prays in Mark. In chapter 14, verse 36, he says, Abba, Father. That very intimate, personal word, Daddy. Like a child with a loving parent, that deep confidence that the child has, that the dad knows them and loves them and cares for them and won't leave them. And so Jesus is going back to and resting in what we saw at his baptism, where God's voice is suddenly heard and he says, You are my son, whom I love, with you I am well pleased. Abba, Father. So the key question we need to ask ourselves about our prayer is this. Do I pray to get things from God, or do I pray to get God? Yeah? Do I pray to get things from God, or do I pray to get God, to be with him? Because if my prayer time is just a list of things I want God to give me, then I'm just really treating him as an upmarket Amazon. You know, if I'm just praying to get stuff from him, of course we do ask him for things, even our daily bread. That is appropriately recognizing our dependence on him. But firstly, we need to pray to be with him, to rejoice and enjoy his presence. Rest in the extraordinary truth that in Jesus we can have the audacity to call the eternal, beginningless creator of the universe, Dad. And to the degree that you really get that and reorientate your heart to it, you'll find that you don't need to scrounge for human affirmation or comfort, or you won't seek power over other people. You can handle the things that life throws at you, the difficult boss, or the unfair criticism, because that's just noise. It doesn't matter. It doesn't affect you deep down, because deep down you're resting in that eternal security of knowing God as your Father. And I think you'll also have a sense of what God is really asking of you. Look at Jesus in verse 38. Everyone's looking for you, they say. Jesus replied, Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages, so that I can preach there also. That is why I have come. He knows what his priority is and what really matters. There's a phrase I regularly repeat to myself, which is, God has given us enough time to do everything he wants us to do. God has given us enough time to do everything he wants us to do. But how do we know what he wants us to do? Well, we need to spend time with him and reflect and listen to his word and engage with him and meet him. And then we begin to know what our calling is. And if you never carve out that time, you'll just be endlessly spinning plates. For me, when I worked in the city, I had to be at my desk at 8 a.m., that painful decision to get up half an hour earlier and have time with God was maybe the single most important step I think I ever took in my spiritual life. And if you're a new parent, that's hard, of course. Maybe you can just carve out a bit of time at the ironing board. And it's not perfect, but you know you need to have time when you can be alone with God. Jesus says, go into your room, shut the door, and talk to your Father. And rest in that. And then other things will begin to fall into place, and there'll be a sense of peace in the frantic busyness of lives. Nobody was busier than Jesus, but he made time. Okay, second point, risk. Nobody will be asked to put their hand into a box and get it covered with spaghetti, I promise you. We only do that to small, defenseless children. Okay, risk. Verse 40, a man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees. Strong emphasis there in Mark's words that he really threw himself on Jesus' mercy. And the man was taking a massive risk in coming into town at all, because lepers weren't allowed any contact with people. They had to live outside the city, and they might be stoned if they came in. Because leprosy was not just a disease, it was an entire social condition, complete physical and spiritual isolation. The leper was the ultimate outsider. And there were lots of rules and regulations about lepers, but they were all to protect other people from them. They offered no hope at all to the lepers. Leprosy was like a kind of life sentence of permanent exclusion. And they weren't even allowed to join others at the synagogue. Many people thought their disease was a sign of God's judgment on them. And that may be why the man says to Jesus, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Because Jesus might just say, no, you're just getting what you deserve, clear off. So he's taking a massive risk in throwing himself on Jesus' mercy. But I'm sure you know how to spell faith. You spell faith R-I-S-K. And that's hard. It's not easy to humble yourself, to throw yourself entirely into someone else's hands. And often we only do it when we're desperate, like this guy. And yet, in the end, we have to do that with Jesus, don't we? Because Jesus is the boss. And so we can't come to him negotiating. Lots of people say, I'm interested in Christianity, but what's the Christian position on this? Or I'm not sure I can accept that. Or I want to make sure that Jesus meets my needs or doesn't make too many demands on me. But we can't really do that if Jesus is who Mark says he is, if he's the creator of the entire universe, the Lord of all. We have to come and throw ourselves on our knees before him. We can't come trying to impose conditions. If this, if that, then I'll believe in you, because Jesus is the boss. If you were here a couple of weeks ago, we had a healing service, which we aim to have two or three times a year. And there's a chance at the end of that service to come and kneel down at the rail and be prayed for. And that is a risky thing to do, because other people will see you coming forward and they'll wonder why. And you might even have to share what you want prayer for. You might even have to admit that you have a need. Who wants to do that? And I didn't know if anyone would come. But if you were here, you'll know that about half the church came forward, and it took a lot of time. And if there'd been more time, I think the other half of the church would have come forward as well. And I thought that was incredibly encouraging for us as a church, because it's so easy in successful Blackheath to pretend we're all fine, isn't it? But of course, the truth is that none of us are fine. All of us need help. All of us are struggling in different ways, no matter how well we conceal it. And if you think you're fine, then Jesus can't really help you. But if you take a risk and admit your need, throw yourself at his feet, then boy, have you come to the right place. So third point, touch, verse 41. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Now, we know that Jesus didn't need to touch him. Jesus can just heal with a word. He didn't even have to be in the same place. He had total authority over sickness and illness. But he reaches out and touches the man because he is filled with compassion. This man had been starved of human contact and isolated and excluded. And now he's bringing him back into community. He's showing him that he's precious and valuable and accepted. Now, it's important to notice that something revolutionary is happening here. And we don't immediately see it because we're looking through New Testament glasses. But it would have been very striking that this was something utterly new to the people who were there. Because throughout the Old Testament, people were told they must not touch anything unclean because it would contaminate them. It would make them unclean. And so if you touched a dead body or a leper, there was a week-long elaborate cleansing ritual you had to go through before you could come to the temple or come into the presence of anything holy. And you find that not just in the Old Testament, but in pretty much every human religion, elaborate cleansing to come into God's presence. But here, for the first time ever, the opposite is happening. Instead of the unclean contaminating the clean is making the unclean pure and renewed and refreshed. Jesus' perfect cleanness instantly cleans this man. Be clean immediately. Verse 42, the leprosy left him and he was cured. And I'm pretty sure that's the reason why Jesus says to the man, go and show yourself to the priest as a testimony to them. Because when the priests see this, they will know this is something utterly new. Something is broken into history that is different. Not another religious teacher telling you how to clean yourself up. Not good advice, but good news. Something has happened. Goodness itself has come into the world. And if you're saying all that ancient religious stuff isn't relevant to me, let me try a thought on you. What about our obsession with celebrities? Perfect, airbrushed, liposuctioned, flawlessly skinned, impossibly beautiful. We know that we can never be like them, and yet we want to be like them. We know they're not real, and yet we idolize them. And we have this desire for cleanliness inside and out, don't we? For perfection. Well, Jesus is true perfection, true goodness coming into the world. And as this unclean man comes into contact with him, he's healed. And he's healed not just physically, but socially and spiritually. Brought back into community, into touch, into contact. And that, I think, is the other reason Jesus tells him to go and show himself to the priest, because that is the official end of his isolation, the way back into community. Jesus' healing touch can make you clean, not just outside, but inside as well, in every part of your life. And it brings you into community, into contact. The church is the body of Christ. And that means we need to be in touch with one another's lives, begin to open up to one another in our very individualistic culture. You don't need to get to know everyone, but you do need to find others, two or three, or ideally more than that, you begin to open up to make yourself vulnerable to. Because this is the place where we learn that we're loved and precious and we find healing. We admit our need because the church is a hospital for sinners, not an academy of the righteous. Now, I'm sure some of you are hearing that and saying, well, actually, I'm fine on my own. I don't need to open up. Yes, you do. That's how you get healed. And you won't get healed unless you begin to do that, to take a risk, to admit your need, and to come into contact with the body of Christ. We don't get healed in our own little bubbles. So then, fourth point, cost. On one level, it looks easy for Jesus to do this healing. Mark's favorite word is immediately, and here it is in verse 42. Immediately, the man was cured. The rabbi said it was as hard to cleanse a leper as it was to raise the dead, and yet Jesus seems to have total authority over sickness and illness. But when we look more closely, I said Mark was subtle, we see actually he's showing us that there is a cost. Verse 43, Jesus sent him away at once, that's the word immediately again, with a strong warning, and it is very strong in the original. And the warning is, don't tell this to anyone. But instead the man, verse 45, went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Now, the reason Jesus gives him this strong warning is that he doesn't want to become a one-man National Health Service. You know, he's in danger of being utterly swamped by people coming and wanting healing. And that is not his priority, as we've already seen in verse 38. His priority is to spread the news. And we'll see that tension more clearly next week. But understandably, perhaps, the man is so filled with joy and delight at his healing that he can't stop himself telling everyone. And as a result, Jesus changes places with him. He comes into town and Jesus goes out into the lonely places where the man has been. And that is literally the desert or the wilderness. And you might remember that when Jesus was baptized, right at the start of his ministry, the Spirit immediately propelled him out, again a very strong word, into the wilderness, into the desert, a place of suffering where evil is present. So Jesus' ministry is not ultimately one of miracle zapping power, but one of weakness and suffering. And this event at the end of chapter 1 is a little parable of where the gospel is heading, to the ultimate lonely place outside the city, where Jesus will change places with us. The one who is true cleanliness becomes unclean, covered in blood and eventually dead. The most unclean thing in the Old Testament system was a dead body. The leper disobeys him and there's a cost, but Jesus bears that cost so that the leper can be cleansed. And it's the same for us, isn't it? Doesn't matter how messed up and dirty you are. You might think, well, there's no hope for me. I'm too contaminated by the past. How can I get away from that taint of the things that have gone wrong in my life? Well, don't think that, because Jesus can cleanse you. He will change places with you with his perfect cleanness and righteousness. He's paid the cost. And so the question is, have you received that cleansing from him? Put your trust in that. Because it is utterly radical. It's a new start. It's not just a makeover, back to square one, start again and make the same mistakes. It's a complete new identity, isn't it? A new birth is the image Jesus sometimes uses. The old you has gone and the new has come. And if you make that new self the engine of your life, you will be changed and you'll become an agent for healing and change in the lives of others around you. Yes, there will be a cost. There is a cost for Jesus. And when we follow Jesus, there's always a cost. But you will never regret it, because Jesus always gives us far more than he asks of us. So come to him, let him touch you. Take a risk, admit your need, and you will be healed, and you will be given his perfect cleansing as he pays the cost for you. And that is why he came. So think about time. If Jesus needed to make time to be alone with his Father, so do we. Think about risk. The leper took the risk of coming into town and throwing himself at Jesus' mercy, saying, "You're the boss if you are willing." Think about touch. Jesus touched him to say he's precious and valuable and to bring him back into community. And we need to begin to open ourselves up to others in the body of Christ. And lastly, think about cost. Jesus is willing to pay the cost so that you can have a new start, so you can be clean. And if you get that right down in your soul, you'll become a source of healing and cleansing and new life to others. So we're going to sing a hymn which is partly based on Jesus going out very early in the morning to be with his Father. It's "Dear Lord and Father of Mankind." And just to think about your walk with him as we sing this. Use this as a chance to come to God and think about that touch that you need in your life. So when the music starts, do stand.